You are listening to the Boomer Beat here on WCOM with your host, Beverly Mahone. And my very special guest today is a woman who wrote a book called Direct Hit: How Facebook Destroyed My Marriage and How I Healed. And we're going to be talking with the author, Caroline Sutherland, right after this. You definitely do not want to miss today's show, so stand by.
She was a good love. She was a sweet love. Thought I had her right here in my hand. Thought I had her all to myself. Well, yeah. But something went wrong. Sing.
We loved each other. We just couldn't get along.
Take a good look at me. I'm a misery. Can't you see?
The love,
the love, the love, the love, the love I lost.
Was it sweet love?
Yes, it was.
The love I lost.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet love.
Yes, it was.
That's Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, The Love I Lost. And that might be kind of appropriate for today's show, in light of the fact that my special guest today, author Caroline Sutherland, has chronicled her life on Facebook with her husband, or her estranged husband. I believe now he is your divorced husband. Is that correct, Caroline?
Well, he's estranged. We're not divorced yet, but we're not together, that's for sure.
Okay, so he is estranged. Well, you are the author of the new book, Direct Hit, How Facebook Destroyed My Marriage and How I Healed. Now, I picked this book up Saturday? I believe it was Saturday. And I started reading it. And then yesterday, I just kept reading. I just couldn't put it down. It was one of those books that kind of held me, you know, on the edge of my seat. I wanted to know what was going to happen on the next page, and then what was going to happen on the next page. So it is quite interesting. Let me ask you, because I want to start out by you telling us about meeting Perry. Now, I don't know if that's his real name, but that's what you call him in the book.
No, it's not his real name. His real name is Gary, but of course, you know, it took me several months to write the book, and because of what had occurred and just, you know, how I felt, I didn't want to be looking at his name every single day in my writing process, so I changed it by one letter. But, you know, it was a very incredible, serendipitous meeting. He came to a seminar that I taught in Seattle in 2003, and he went into hot pursuit, and I basically fell in love with him. He was a medical professional like me, a registered nurse. He was in the field. He was very charming, very educated, and quite frankly, he swept me off my feet. And so, you know, there this you know, storybook romance ensued. And then to find, after being together for 6 years, that what he was doing was positively the opposite of how he had portrayed himself as this wonderful, grounded, spiritual, medical professional, and then to find that he was using my name on my Facebook account, pretending to be me, and then trolling for younger women in their mid-20s and underage women, and then interfacing with them in a sexually graphic manner, this disgusting and salacious manner, utilizing my name and completely misappropriating my name. It was really unfathomable to me, and I've done a lot of research, of course, in the process, and have found out that this individual was living a whole double life, but was a severely behaviorally disordered individual. So it was incredibly upsetting and just, you know, completely disturbing, but somehow I've managed to get through it and get out the other side.
Well, let me point out something that you said in the book. And I was very interested in the fact that you said that, you know, plants or flowers talk to you, or you could get some kind of, you know, thoughts from them. And in on one of the pages, you talked about a beautiful bouquet of butterfly orchids that was in the lobby of this hotel you were in. And apparently this orchid seemed to speak to you and say, you agreed to this. So,
yeah.
And you thought, you've got to be kidding. But
yeah.
The orchid said, you agree to this. So on some level, you say in the book that you must have agreed to be betrayed by the man you loved. Now, will you explain exactly what that means now?
Yes. Well, you have to. I mean, I believe that everything happens to us, happens for a reason. And in spiritual terms, if you think about it, things that happen in our life, we don't know that they're going to happen, but on some level, if you believe this, and not everybody does, that if things happen that are bad and they are just horrible, horrible difficulties to go through, on some level, it's part of our soul's contract and we agree to it. Now, that's tough for a lot of people to accept, but it's not tough for me to accept. And yes, I have spoken and have heard, had messages from flowers and different things along the way in my life. That's my gift is intuition. And so I use intuition physically to help people on the physical level. And so I have received communications from orchids. And this particular staggeringly beautiful bouquet of orchids, I stopped right in front of it. I was going right through the thick of the gale with discovering this behavior by my husband. And I got these words from this orchid: you agreed to this. So this is tough. It's a very high spiritual metaphysical concept for a lot of people to believe. Oh, you mean my husband left me, and at some level I agreed to this. Well, in my case, I believe that was the case. I had to have this experience because I am a spiritual teacher, and I give seminars and presentations, and I'm constantly doing radio shows and teleconferences. For me to go through this Judas Iscariot betrayal moment was also very much part of what I will be teaching and have been teaching in the last, you know, year and a half.
Caroline, some people say that we are what we attract. So would you say that there is some validity to that in your case as it involves your estranged husband? You attracted it. You agreed to this. So you're saying you agreed to it, but do you believe that it was attracted to you because of something in you?
Yes. Well, I believe I did attract it to me for the simple reason that perhaps, potentially, with my book, Direct Hit, How Facebook Destroyed My Marriage and How I Healed, to shed a spotlight on what is happening in social media that may not be completely above board. And I was very interested. We know a lot about kids who get into trouble on social media, posting photographs and saying things that they'll later regret. But I was interested to see what the fallout from social media could be on committed long-term relationships and marriages. And so for me to have had that experience, to have attracted it to me, I'm hoping will have some benefit. And you know, people have experiences. Why do we have children who die, or why do we fall ill and have serious illnesses and so forth? There's something in us that we need to learn from these experiences, and so we attract them to us, and it's difficult. I mean, how can we avoid attracting these experiences? If we're on a spiritual path or if we're on any kind of a life's journey, there are ups and downs, and there are difficulties that we don't want to have, but for some reason, we bring them into our lives.
Would you say also that there may have been some vulnerability on your part? Because according to your book, you had been single for 18 years, and that's a long time. And then all of a sudden, some good-looking man named Gary pops up, and you're like, whoa. So could that have also played a part?
Well, I was single for 18 years. I did date through that time, but nobody was marriage material, nobody I wanted to sign on with. But he was extremely charming, very, he was nice looking, he was charming, he was very well educated. He was able to read me. And from what I can understand, and actually next week I'm going to be doing an interview with a professor from the Criminal Justice Department in at the University of California, Long Beach, whose specialty is sociopathic and psychopathic behavior. And what I can understand from discussions with experts in this field, that these people that are sociopaths are extremely charming. They groom their victims, or you know, they groom the next person that they're going to be with, and they know exactly how to read them, what to say, what to do. And I was bowled over by this man's charm and his affability and his education. And the fit was just a perfect fit. In my book, as you know, I wrote the love story about meeting him. And I was a very happily woman, or so I thought, for 5 years, until Facebook came to our attention. I had a business development consultation with two people who suggested, who were very skilled at web building and ways of creating visibility and improving web presence and so forth. And they suggested creating a Facebook page for my business, which I did. And, of course, my husband was my business partner. He was my manager. And so he oversaw the postings on the Facebook page. And little did I know that this behavior was going on behind the scenes. And if it wasn't for my personal assistant, who I call Colleen in the book, who is just a marvelous, incredible person, if it wasn't for her, this behavior would still be going to this day.
Wow.
Yes. Wow.
Well, you know, the story that you wrote in the very beginning of the book about how the romance developed. I mean, it sounded like well, I know it wasn't a whirlwind romance, but it sounded like it. And it sounded, to be perfectly honest, too good to be true. I thought, oh, my God. And I said to my husband, I read an excerpt that you wrote about something that he had done for you. And I said, honey, I said, wow, you didn't sweep me off my feet like that. You know, I mean, it was like, but we're still happily married. So mm-hmm. it's a, you know, I guess. When I read what you wrote, I can kind of see how, you know, you've gotten to where you are. But let me, you use the word sociopath. Now, mm-hmm. are you saying that your estranged husband is a sociopath, or you're saying that he fits the characteristics?
Well, he fits the characteristics. I actually had his behavior profiled by a criminologist, and all of that behavior related to sociopathy, sex addiction, love addiction, narcissism, that was the behavior. So it's hard to believe. And I had no idea what a narcissist was. I had no idea what a sociopath was. I mean, I sort of did. You know how you have a rough idea of what these behaviors are? But, of course, you never, ever think you're going to meet one. Well, guess what? One in 25 people is a sociopath. And there's a great book called The Sociopath Next Door, written by Martha Stout. She's a PhD psychologist. And that book is an eye-opener, and quite likely and quite frankly, someone in your neighborhood, someone in your coterie of friends, you know, could be a sociopath. So, yes, it was shocking to me that I was married to somebody who was severely behaviorally disordered. I mean, nobody would do that. You see, what was interesting is that I pursued legal channels, and I've obtained a judgment against my estranged husband for defamation of character, identity theft, and a classification, a legal classification called behavior considered outrageous by civilized society. That is a legal classification, and this behavior was outrageous by a registered nurse, a professional man, well-educated with 3 university degrees, and so there is a legal classification for that, which I found stunning.
Did you actually check out his background at some point to see if, in fact, he was who he said he was?
Oh, absolutely. He's a registered nurse. He has to have background checks every year from, you know, through the police department, police background checks. He was a bona fide individual operating. I mean, he was a cancer nurse, an oncology nurse, working in a very, very prestigious hospital. So his background was thoroughly checked out.
Were there any red flags that in hindsight, because when we go back in hindsight, we can see things and think, oh, my God, I should have caught that. That may have now made you believe that he wasn't all that he appeared to be, other than Facebook, because we know about Facebook, and we're going to talk about that in more detail in a moment. But was there anything else about him that made you now say, I should have caught that?
Well, there was one thing, and that was when I write in the book about his burden of debt. And when we went to get a mortgage for our condo, he told the lender that he had, you know, XYZ amount of debt. And I found bills that he had. I mean, admittedly, I didn't open them. They were already open, but I glanced at them. And it was a lot more debt than he had stated. And so that was a lie at the beginning, when I noticed what he did have in debt, when he was talking about getting married, well, we're going to get married, I said, well, there won't be any wedding until all of this debt is cleared up, and which he did. He worked very hard and actively, and it took 2 years, and he did get it cleared up. But it was a lie at the outset, which when I understood and did research on sociopathy and behavior disorders, lying about debt and mismanagement of money is apparently one of the characteristics of somebody with a behavior disorder, which at the time I said, well, you know, we're not getting married until you clear this up. And I didn't say, well, why did you lie and say I only had $20,000 instead of, you know, what he did have? I didn't say that. I just said this needed to be cleared up. So I didn't catch that in the way, you know, and it would only have been hindsight that I would have done anything with it. I mean, we were in love. We had bought a home together. We were planning our wedding, which, by the way, did not happen for 2 years following that that discovery. So there was that. And also unnecessary shopping. And he still is a Buddhist. Goodness knows this man with his behavior, you know, Buddhism is about, you know, doing no harm and treating everybody with love and compassion. But he was a shopper, and he would do unnecessary spending, small things that we already had, you know, many, many books, many, many shirts, many Buddhist trinkets, that kind of thing, that were unnecessary, and they weren't building really our life together. They were just adding to his load of acquisitions. And so I found that, you know, I couldn't kind of match those two up. And so that also is another trait in this behavior disorder, part of this unnecessary spending and financial, you know, a lack of real sense in terms of finances.
Caroline, you said that it was your assistant who brought what was going on Facebook to your attention. Take us through exactly what he was doing, because when I read some of the Skype conversation, and I thought, oh my God, am I reading a porno book or what?
Well, but she didn't find that. You see, what happened was she found what she did. There's a sequence here that's very interesting. What happened was I was doing a private presentation in Orlando, Florida, and the following morning we were checking out of the hotel, and my assistant, who I say, call her Colleen in the book, Colleen phoned me, "Caroline, I'm sending you some Facebook postings. Put on there by your husband Perry, and you need to look at these postings. They're illegal and possibly criminal, and you need to look at them." We were checking out of the hotel. I had a quick glance for the first, you know, 6 or 8 of these postings, and was shocked and horrified. "What are you doing?" And admonished my husband, as you'll see in the book, all the way back to West Palm Beach where we were staying. And then he was taken off the Facebook account, and everything was sort of shut down, and I was sort of reeling from the shock of the whole thing. And that was it. And then there was a series of events that happened over a year. And then what happened was in August of 2010, when he said he wasn't on Facebook any longer and didn't even have his own Facebook account, I discovered him on Facebook. And there's quite a story of this observation. And so I grabbed his laptop, which was a company laptop, my laptop, locked it in a trunk. I had a key. And then he went and to visit his daughter for a couple of days, had to drive his daughter back down to Portland. She was at my home visiting for a family wedding. And I had a forensics expert. I had my IT guy who works in forensics come over and examine that laptop. And that was one of the most shocking revelations, was to see this Skype conversation, other Skype conversations, but this one in particular, 149 pages of interaction with a young woman married in Singapore, I believe, and just the nature of the discussion back and forth would curl your hair. So that was a discovery.
Oh, it did. Yeah, my hair is already curly, but it got curlier.
Yes, but that was not Colleen who found that. I found that. And then my husband promptly left me and went to say he was going on a camping trip, but he wasn't. He went off with another woman that he met on Facebook. And then we separated. I was completely devastated. My whole life just came completely apart. And then he went off to live with her for 2.5 months. We got back together again. He promised there wasn't any Facebook, no more of this. I call her area code 518 in the book. That was all finished. And I took him back. I loved him, and I wanted to see if it would work. But then I discovered he was back on the email again. And that is when two things happened. He made two big mistakes. He made a lot of mistakes, but he made two big ones. One was suing me for monthly maintenance, called manimony, suing me for alimony, and two, forgetting that I know how to write books and I'm a best-selling author. So he sued me for alimony. Can you imagine? He wanted money, you know, a significant amount of money, because obviously I was a higher wage earner. And that was a mistake. So I emailed Colleen, my assistant, and said, "Send me those Facebook postings that you sent me a year ago from Florida. I want to look at them." I had a chance then to look through every single one of them, and I knew there was no question that behavior that had taken place a year ago was absolutely criminal and illegal. I got a very good attorney in Bellingham, Washington, who takes novel and interesting, challenging cases, and he went to bat, and he knew that this was a case And I was able to initiate a lawsuit against my estranged husband, which is in play right now as we speak. And so that's the nature of the discovery. Colleen was the one who found the Facebook postings. I was the one, along with my forensics team, able to find exactly what was going on these Skype conversations. And I would say to every woman who's listening, if you are married, if you're in a committed long-term relationship, find everything out that you can if you suspect odd behavior. Now, there was odd behavior going on, but because I didn't suspect my husband, because he was a professional man, a registered nurse, et cetera, I never would suspect that he would be online having these conversations with women and doing all of this. I never would have suspected it. And so if you have a suspicion about inappropriate activity on the internet, or the cell phone that's locked in the car and is charging out in the car, or that there's phone calls being flipped on and flipped off, and my husband would say, and of course I didn't think of it at the time, but the phone would ring, and he would look and see who it was or lift it up, and I'd say, well, who was that? And he'd say, well, that was a solicitation. Where was my brain that I wasn't realizing? You don't get solicitations on your cell phone. Now, I was not getting that. You know, who was I to know that you didn't get solicitations on a cell phone? And different other behaviors. And he'd want to check into the hotel right away and get the access code to get onto the computer. And he was always in a hurry to check his emails, check his cell phone. I mean, it was, looking back on it, it was all there, and I was completely blind to it because I loved him, and I never suspected it. My publisher, Hay House, they never suspected the behavior. None of my friends or my family members, everyone was stunned by this behavior. No one suspected anything.
Well, I'm not going to defend Perry by any stretch of the imagination here, but I can tell you from personal experience that, yes, we do get telecalls on our cell phones. We get solicitations on our cell phones. I just got one today, so I know that happens. But
well, I don't. But a year ago, maybe we didn't.
That's not really the point.
Idea.
Okay, but let me ask you, going back to the very beginnings of the Facebook postings, what was his motivation? Because he was portraying himself as you and communicating with young women. And so was he, I mean, he was obviously representing you as a lesbian or someone who just really was infatuated with other women. So what was his motivation there?
With all due respect to the gay and lesbian community, that's not my orientation. But according to my attorney and, you know, the behavioral experts I've spoken to, this was all for his own sexual gratification in a very kinky manner, albeit. But that's the reason for it. Sociopath wants to bring people down. If you read Martha Stout's book, The Sociopath Next Door, their prime motivation is taking people down. It's in their DNA. It's in their character. It's in their disordered behavior. That's what they do. And that was what he obviously was bent on doing, bringing me down and portraying me in a unfavorable light, or in any light that was certainly not the way I should be portrayed, to bring me down professionally. That was his aim. Now, can you understand that? It took me a long time to understand it, because at first I thought, this is a normal, rational man who's acted irrationally. No, he wasn't normal, and he was behaviorally disordered. It took a long time to understand that, and it was only with working with criminologists and with people that are experts in this field of sociopathy and psychopathy that I was able to understand the behavior. It was nothing to do with me. It was not committed by a normal, sane, and rational individual. It was committed, these acts that were illegal and criminal, were committed by a behaviorally disordered individual.
You talked in the book about a couple of instances where he actually invited women, I guess that he had connected with on Facebook or somewhere, to come to dinner with you all. What was that about?
Oh, my gosh, that was bizarre. Well, you see, he was involved in my Facebook postings, and so, thank goodness, was my assistant, Colleen. And so he had started up an interaction with several women. I mean, I mentioned a number of different instances, and there were other ones, where he, posing as me, would invite these women to dinner and come to dinner when we were in different cities. So it would be wonderful to see you, or you're one of my Facebook friends, meet us at such and such a restaurant. And all of a sudden, we'd be at the door of the restaurant, and out of a taxi would you know, appear a tall, blonde, blonde-eyed, you know, young woman. And he would say, well, this is your friend, you know, Marlene or whatever, your Facebook friend. And I had to pretend like I was all excited to see this gal at a dinner that was entirely inappropriate for her to be there. And this was my husband obviously getting his sexual gratification by inviting a young woman to attend this dinner with us. I mean, it was bizarre, but at the time, I had no idea what it was. And, you know, other times where we had to get in a taxi and drive a long distance to meet somebody at a restaurant, I mean, it was, I simply, I'd say, well, no, I'm not doing this. Oh, honey, it'll only take us about an hour, and it'll be mean a lot to this person. And, oh, you know, it was, I was in the middle of something that was an absolute nightmare, and how I carved my way out of it, fought my way out of it, is unfathomable to me. And I mean, it took every ounce of strength to get through something that was literally a hailstorm and a maelstrom being created around me.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and speak more with Caroline Sutherland, the author of the newly released book, Direct Hit, How Facebook Destroyed My Marriage and How I Healed. You are listening to The Boomer Beat here on WCOM.
Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows she'll be there. Holding hands, making all kinds of plans, while the jukebox plays her favorite song. Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We gotta be extra careful that we don't build our hopes up too high, 'cause she's got her own obligations, and so do I. But it's much too strong to let it go now. Well, it's time for us
loving. It hurts so much, it hurts so much inside. Now she'll go her way, and I'll go mine. Tomorrow we'll meet the same place, the same time. Me and Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones. Got a thing going on. The same place, the same cafe, the same time. And we're gonna hold hands like we used to. We're gonna talk it over, talk it over. We know, they know, and you know and I know that it was wrong.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. That apparently was the case with Perry and the woman in 518, as well as the woman in Malaysia. You are listening to the Boomer Beat here on WCOM with my very special guest today, author Caroline Sutherland, who really has, Caroline, you know, you've kind of taken a different twist with this book because we all know you from the Body Knows series, but this one, Direct Hit, is a far cry from that.
Yes, absolutely. But I knew the book was important. I knew the book would empower people, especially women who may be going through something similar. I figured if I was going through this, other women would be going through something similar. I wasn't the only one. And it was a pivotal life experience for me, and I do write about my own experiences. And I wanted the book to be inspirational, to be uplifting, to show people, men and women, that you can survive these challenges that are of epic proportions. You can get through them, and I wanted to give people the tools to do so.
Was writing this book hard for you?
Oh, it was incredibly tough. I mean, I cried literally for a whole year. It was tough to write that book, but looking back on it, I'm really glad I did. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily consider it my magnum opus because I've written other books that I think are great books. This is a very good book. It's inspirational. It's a page-turner, and it's riveting, and it shows what can happen. And that people can actually be with, know people, living with people who are living complete double lives. And when I finished the book, I felt very gratified and very, you know, I felt pleased that I had the courage to write the book, yes.
And you know what? I can really relate to that because I wrote my own truth-telling book back in 2010 called Don't Ask and I Won't Have to Lie. And once I finished, I felt so good because I had released a lot of stuff and just, you know, sometimes you have to do that. But I want to talk to you about chapter 11 because this is so important. People think that when they go through something that, you know, you can heal yourself. But you're saying, no, you need a support system. You need something, some people around you to help you so that you can get out of the rut that you may be stuck in.
Well, I was so grateful for Counselor Dawn. That woman was unbelievable, and I was able to talk to her on the phone on a daily basis, and I was trying to make sense of something that was going on around me that was like sand going through an hourglass. And she was incredibly helpful. My sister, my younger sister, she was incredibly helpful. My daughters were helpful. And I had two very close friends who were incredibly helpful. And they were stabilizing. My church was, of course, they knew nothing at the church. Nobody knew anything. I didn't speak about this for a whole year. It wasn't until Perry tried to sue me for maintenance. That was when I knew I had to write about it. I knew I had to make it public, but I said nothing for a whole year until December 15th, until that book was released on Amazon. And so, yes, I was fortunate. Just a few carefully selected people who I knew I could share with and who would be there and would help me. And I'm also very spiritual, and I get a lot of guidance, and I'm able to literally, you know, tune in and ask God for help, and my spiritual connection, my church and all of that. I wouldn't have made it without that. I mean, literally, I wouldn't have.
I read some statistics, so it's been a few months ago, that were out of the UK, talking about inappropriate behavior involving spouses on social media. And the statistics there indicated that I think out of like 3,500 people they interviewed, that close to 30% of people had some kind of inappropriate activity with someone else on social media. What has been your experience? How widespread do you think it is, personally?
Well, it depends on what group you're speaking to. I mean, Men's Health, for example, they did a survey of 70% of the subscribers on Men's Health, 34% of them were interfacing inappropriately on social media when they were in a committed relationship. So I think it is quite widespread. 1 in 5 divorces now apparently is linked in to some kind of Facebook connection. So it's a big deal. I mean, you know, it's very tempting and it's very accessible. And so, you know, I think it can be a problem for sure. And exactly how widespread it is, who's to know? But it looks like it's very widespread.
But you wouldn't think that it would be involving people of a certain age. I wouldn't expect that my 50-something-year-old husband would be trolling in social media looking for other chicks. You know, like you, I just can't even fathom that.
That's right.
But
well,
yeah.
This guy is now 66 years of age. My estranged husband, he's 66 years of age. He is on Facebook every single day. I have forensics experts who follow him, mostly to make sure that he's not using my name inappropriately. So he's being observed. His activities are being observed. And he garners between 100 and 200 women's names every month. They're all young women, all beautiful young women from foreign countries, some of them underage women. And he has now close to 2,000 female followers on his Facebook page currently now as we speak. So it's very interesting. It's a very deep behavior disorder, and there's a sadness. I mean, you have to have a lot of compassion for somebody that has such an empty life that they will fill it up with this kind of activity that will obviously go nowhere except give him gratification. I mean, you know, what man wouldn't want to have 2,000 female followers? But it's that's not normal behavior.
You said earlier that you would describe him as a sociopath, but my question to you is, would he also have some type of internet sexual addiction?
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's something that I didn't know about. I'm an early riser and I get to bed early. And he was a night owl. He was a registered nurse and he did the night shift. And so what was happening is he'd come to bed with me. And then if I'd get up to go to the bathroom, there'd be a light on in his office, and I would, you know, be thinking, well, I guess he's up, you know, checking emails or doing something. He had a Buddhist practice chanting thing that he did. And but obviously, he was on the internet, and he was having these conversations, Skype conversations, and who knows what all else was going on with different women in different places. And so, yes, that's a sex addiction, somebody who's always on the chase, always looking for the high. They never necessarily want to meet the person. They want to continue this conquest, stalk and conquest.
Caroline, could you have written this book without the very graphic details of the conversation with your husband and his Malaysian friend? Because it was pretty graphic, and I like, whoa, and I kept reading, and I was like, whoa. So could you have written it without that?
Not really. I mean, if you're going to create a statement, people will change when they're shocked into changing. People will become aware when they see a book like this that is shocking and is graphic. They'll be on the lookout now for their own spouse, or they'll be looking out to see what's going on if they're involved with anyone who's on social media. You know, this gives people something to really, you know, come to grips with. And I knew that I was I wasn't one bit concerned about those details. Those details needed to be told. And yes, it is. It's graphic. It's unbelievable. And you really see the nature of the person. And for me to actually see that was heart-wrenching. To open up his computer with my eye guy right next to me, who knows me well, and to see this was something that I will never forget.
Because, you know, in the book, you know, in the early stages of this, you know, I felt, you know, how much you really loved him, and you were willing to overlook some of this stuff. And I was thinking, oh, no, he has one chance, and that's it. But you really wanted to give him an opportunity to clean up his act and come back so that you could continue to live this fairy tale kind of marriage. That's what I read.
Unbelievable, but I really didn't have the full picture. If I had had the full picture, the full nature of those Facebook postings that I did not fully see in 2010 and only saw them in 2011, if I had seen them then in 2010, the marriage would have been over immediately. So that was just because I was not aware. That awareness did not come to me for a full year. And I'm glad it took that long because I had to live through that. The book wouldn't have nearly been as compelling if I had severed that whole communication back in 2010.
Has this incident left a sour taste in your mouth for social media, or have you just jumped back in with both feet but being much more cautious about what you're doing?
Well, I've always been on social media. I think Facebook is a wonderful tool for communication. I have, 25,000 Facebook friends and about the same amount Twitter. And then I communicate with Colleen, my social media contractor and my assistant, and we decide what we're going to be posting. I have little health tips and so forth. So I'm not concerned about it. I personally don't do anything on social media as far as my personal life is concerned. And so for me, that's not a problem. What was going on here was my husband was on my Facebook page, and he also had his own Facebook, which he said he had shut down, which, of course, he did not shut down. So am I gun-shy of social media? I would say for people to be very aware of it, and I've heard from a lot of people since the book was launched that they are no longer doing social media. I've had people say to me they had pictures of their family, and, of course, these can be tagged by perverts. You know, pictures of your children can be tagged to find out the location, as I mentioned in the book, of where this child actually lives and where they go to school. So we really need to have people be very aware of, you know, the dangers of social media and just to be aware and protect themselves and to communicate. You know, if your spouse is on social media, then let's be communicating. You need their password. You need to see what they're doing. You want to look at their postings and get savvy. I had no idea that you could do things called chat and instant messaging and so forth on Facebook. These are things that young people know all about. I mean, I'm going to be 69 years of age next year, so I'm in a completely different realm when it comes to technology.
And you're absolutely right about that. And that is something that I do teach boomer women, is just to know exactly how to use social media to your advantage, but on a slightly different level. Well, on that note, I want to ask you one last question. How can we get a copy of your book?
You bet. It's up on Amazon. Direct Hit, How Facebook Destroyed My Marriage and How I Healed. It's $7.99 on Amazon as an ebook, and you don't have to have an e-reader. You can download it right to your computer. It's a very, you know, fast read. You'll don't start it late at night because you won't want to put it down.
That's
true. And
it's
also available as a book, and you can order that as well on Amazon.
That is true. All right, Caroline, thank you so very much. This has just been a very enlightening conversation. All right, well, next week, my very special guest is going to be Regina Baker. Yes, Regina Baker, who has been an internet marketer before the internet was popular, is going to tell us how she remains a woman on the move and making a difference at midlife on the internet. Until next time, remember this. You have gifts to give the world, so find your voice and prosper. See ya!